as we are going into one of the highest holy weeks in the Christian calendar, the question is, are we going to rise again from the COVID virus? Next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principal Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
Hey, Barry. It's very good to be back with you here again this week. Hey, look, still not falling over dead from the virus.
Well, that's good. That's good.
I've had other things, Nietzsche's famous or more likely infamous quote, "What doesn't kill you makes you stronger," which is actually completely false.
See, I always thought it was "What doesn't kill you makes you wish you were dead."
I've come from a weekend that didn't kill me, but I thought I might drop dead with issues with plumbing and that kind of thing. And it was surprisingly easy to get a plumber to come out, despite the fact that everything's on lockdown. I think they were happy for the business. Drain issues. I live out in the country. We have a septic system, and it turns out one of the pipes out to my septic tank has been crushed somehow. We don't know how. No trucks back there, but nonetheless crushed. So we're going to have to get that fixed. Not looking forward to that. But it's okay for now. There's a lot of stuff out there happening, Barry. I mean, people are at home and they're kind of glued to their TVs. And if you're watching the mainstream media, you're getting the idea that there should be corpses in the street and blah, blah. And the numbers just really aren't there.
And actually, I think it was we're recording this on Thursday of Easter week. I want to make sure we remind folks that it is a doctrine of Christianity that we will rise with Christ and the holies. Because he has saved us. And he's not only saved us from our sins, he saved us in many instances from our human stupidity. But we're going to have, I don't know about you or your church. I know that your church, Chuck, you guys are doing, your YouTube and your Facebook Live for your services because you're one of the tech wizards.
That's right.
You understand all these systems and how to put that together. And actually, last Sunday morning, I had the pleasant opportunity of hearing at least part of the message of your pastor. So it was kind of nice because my little church, my little country church that has about a dozen people in it, all of whom are, let's put it this way, the median age in our church, I think, is somewhere in the neighborhood of 70. The median age. So, we have a lot of older people who are not as tech savvy and who also, we are trying to be careful with in relation to this particular current outbreak of unpleasantness called COVID-19. And so we've not been having church, not because we don't want to and not because we wouldn't like to do, the electronic stuff, but it's because we would lose about half of our church who wouldn't be able to would have to have somebody there to help them get on to these electronic platforms and the social media stuff. So we're kind of in a situation where, by no fault of our own, but, just through the vicissitudes of the way things are. But I'm grateful to people like you who are helping their churches and their pastors to be able to put that message forward through the social media platforms, over the electronic airwaves, through places like YouTube and others, to get the gospel message out. And so, folks, even if your church or parish or synagogue, if it's not open, if your pastor or your elders have chosen to exercise overabundance of prudence, which it was not a bad thing.
No.
And have decided that, perhaps we're going to wait a little while longer before we open things back up. You know, that's fine. You know, just work with that, and if you need to, go online. Now, Chuck, I know you probably at some point you can give the URL for Providence OPC, which is the church that you attend, and your pastor, because, you know, you guys have got some good messaging, so.
Well, we have an easy-to-remember website. It's providenceopc.us.
Okay. Providence. Well, that may not be quite as easy because people are used to .com, .org, so that .us maybe an extension that might throw a couple of people off. But
also, if you go to providenceopc.us, we'll tell you how to get on our YouTube channel and also on our Facebook channel. In fact, our Facebook channel is Providence Presbyterian Church OPC. You can find it in Pataskalo, Ohio, Providence, and you can watch it live on YouTube because we double feed. We feed both YouTube and Facebook at the same time. So you can watch us live. There are generally four of us in the church, the pastor, me, the piano player, and the sound guy. And occasionally someone else will come in and sit way in the back. But the door's locked, so you can't just walk in. It's a prearranged thing. But it's providenceopc.us. Very easy to remember, providenceopc.us. And you can listen to the sermons there. I'm going to start figuring out how to embed our YouTube videos in there. It's not that hard. It's just downloading and making a piece of software work. I would like to be able to do the live feeds from there. So, in any case, yeah. Please join us. We'll be happy to have you with us if you don't have something else to go to on Sunday. Of course, it's Easter Sunday, so it's going to be. Remember, we were supposed to be all in church on Easter Sunday originally, according to Trump, and of course the quote unquote experts put the kibosh on that.
As experts tend to do,
yeah. You can argue whether that actually had an effect or not. I tend to think it may have a little bit. I'm not going to discount this social distancing as helping to put the quash on this virus because I think it did. Or it is in the middle of it because the number of cases are falling off. There's some other shenanigans going on inside the government. The numbers just are not there. If you recall, Dr. Amy Acton, who's Ohio's Department of Health director,
right,
made some rather absurd claims when this thing first started.
Be careful, Chuck. Now, even according to her, she made guesstimates. Okay, which if you're in a let me just maybe give her a little piece of advice. If you are in a position of authority and you're basically given that authority to basically call the shots, don't be calling shots based on what you guess might be the case. Base it upon data. Base it upon experiential understanding. Base it upon receiving as they call a multitude of counselors. Chuck, I think Scripture talks about there being safety in a multitude of counselors. From what I understand, she basically was looking at one set of models, which we have now come to find out were wildly oversubscribed to and overestimated because the original researcher did exactly the same thing that Dr. Acton did. They guesstimated. And, of course, you have to have some assumptions, but when you assume that 60% of the entire population of the planet is going to contract this particular disease that is fairly new and you have very little experience with, and the only corollary disease that you have is something that happened 100 years prior and 100 years earlier than the advent of easy access to things like penicillin, to antibiotics, to other treatments, the list goes on and on, to better medical technology, better equipment, better testing, etc. And you make these assumptions, and of course the first set of assumptions were put out there, and then it became like an echo chamber. Many people, including Dr. Amy Acton, wanted a quick answer because they were feeling pressure. And so they rolled out, and her original guesstimate on this whole thing was that 100,000 people in Ohio were already
infected
with COVID-19. Now, if you think of that number, there are 11.6 million people in the state of Ohio, Chuck. That would be just roughly about 0.8%. Okay? Now, does that sound reasonable? Let's put it this way. If you didn't have any other further data or information in front of you, like the experience of everything that's happened since basically the beginning of March till now, and you were looking at models and said, we could predict about 0.8% of the population is infected with this. I mean, would that sound reasonable?
No.
Actually, exactly. I was hoping you'd say yes, but okay, you I forgot. You're a biochemist and you're a scientist yourself. You understand these things. It doesn't sound reasonable because it's not experientially how these type of things have developed before. It's usually in the tenths of percents, the hundredths of percents, or the thousands of percents when you look at an overall population, when a new infection, what the rate of uptake is going to be on that infection,
right.
And where it's going to spread or how it's going to spread. They already had a decent idea that this one wasn't one that basically just lingered in the air and you could catch it, et cetera. That it actually had to be from a transmission through bodily fluids of some sort, like somebody sneezing or coughing and having particulates actually attached to another person or be on some kind of commonly used, like a doorknob things of that nature.
Real quick, we need to go into that. Just, I don't want to get too far in the weeds. I want to say, the information that came out of China on this, where the virus first jumped to human beings, probably from an animal, probably from a bat. The information was, well, we don't even think. They told us for weeks, we don't even think that it can be transmitted person to person. And the World Health Organization, which is basically kissing up to the Chinese leadership because the current director of the World Health Organization got his job because China stepped in and made sure that he did get it. Now, that being said, China lied and lied and lied and lied. They lied about the number of people who were infected. They lied about how virulent it was. They lied about the number of deaths. They've lied all the way through this. And yet we built models based on the lies that the Chinese told us. Nobody really thought until mid-December, because of what the Chinese were telling us, why anyone trusted the Chinese, I don't know. But nonetheless, the numbers were going to be kind of low. And then we started seeing when it started hitting places like Italy and other spots in Asia, that the numbers were wrong. But what we still don't have, Barry, and we won't have for years, is a count of the number of people who have been exposed to the virus, which, by the way, you have to inhale. You have to get it into yourself somehow. It has to be picked up off a doorknob, a flat surface. It can be aerosolized. In other words, if somebody sneezes near you, this is why we do 6-foot social distancing, that the virus can be in the aerosol. This is why if somebody's coughing around you, you should not be in the vicinity. Look, one of the problems we have right now is the fact that we're also in the middle of allergy season.
It's true.
So what's going on? People are coughing. People are sneezing. I've got a runny nose. I've had it now for 2 weeks. Is it the coronavirus? No. I'm allergic to tree pollen. And the tree started budding a couple of weeks ago. Well,
yes, you know, they did.
I'm sniffing and that kind of stuff. It's all allergy symptoms. Well, how do you tell the difference in the store between somebody who's got an allergy, and there are a lot of people, and people who may have been exposed to the virus? Well, you can't. This is why they're encouraging wearing masks and all that. Now, look, when I go into Home Depot to buy some wood, I don't wear a mask. First of all, you can't find a mask. Good luck. If you're doing a job where you're doing fine particulate work and you need to filter that out, you better have some in stock because there aren't any available. You can't get those. Good luck to you doing that. Second of all, is it as contagious? You know, this thing about lining up outside Walmart and only letting 100 people in the store at a time. Okay.
Well, our Walmart, it's 900, so.
Okay. Oh, 900.
I had to go the other day to pick up some things. And, you know, went up there, and of course they've got the checker out there, you know, you can only go through one door, and they've got it all taped
exactly.
off.
Yeah,
and,
same thing.
And they got signs on the door, they can't have more than 900 in the store at a time, and I'm like, well, 900's, it's a big store, it's a Walmart, but
yeah, it's
I'm
a big,
like, 900's a lot of people.
It's a super store. Yeah, that's a pretty big store. At Home Depot, it's a 100, and that's a big store. So, nonetheless, here's the problem, Barry. We don't have numbers. These men and women are making estimates. They're taking worst case scenarios and actually multiplying them. We already know. We're getting admissions. I heard Dr. Burke say this the other day on one of the briefings.
And for those of you who haven't been paying any attention, he's referencing Dr. Deborah Birx, who has been front and center with Dr. Anthony Fauci at the White House press briefings in relation to this, because she is a specialist in these areas.
Literally, she said, if you die, if you're hit by a bus and they do an autopsy and they discover you're COVID-19 positive, you are counted as a COVID-19 death.
Well, you know, again, I think that is more than a little stupid. But, again, when you came out with these models that predicted mass extinction level of infections, and what you got was, oh, it's a little stronger than people, you know, getting the flu.
Well, then, when the Imperial
College... It's actually not even stronger than people getting the flu, from what I understand. So.
Well, we're still going on the Imperial Medical College model that the Imperial Medical College has withdrawn.
Yes, that was the model I was talking about originally, where the original research was built on assumptions that proved to be wildly out of phase with what the reality is on the ground. And again, like I said, this week, Amy Acton there at the Department of Health, to kind of come back around to what you were talking about, had to revise down their estimates. You know, instead of 100,000 people already walking around with it, I think the case numbers as of today, we looked this up before going on air, was somewhere in the neighborhood of 5,000. Anyway, I'll pull it right up here. 5,148 cases.
Now, to be clear,
not 100,000, right. Not 100,000, 5,000 cases. Now, we've done somewhere in the neighborhood of 80,000 tests, Chuck. So we've tested almost that 100,000 people. And basically what we're finding is 100,000 people that we tested aren't walking around. Now, again, Ohio's total population is 11.6 million people, okay? For those of you who want to be quick naysayers, you can say, well, if we tested the entire population, we'd probably have 100,000. Well, so what?
Well, you're making our point, actually.
You're making our point for us, because if we did test the entire population of the state of Ohio, all 11,688,000 people, I think is what it is, if we test the entire population... And we came up, and even if the numbers, let's say we tracked right now, so that's 80,000.
Okay,
so
I've already done the math here.
Yeah, so you've got the math down.
Yeah,
so
here's, we've had 193 deaths. If we've had 80,000 tests, the death rate is
0.2%. 0.2, so 0.2%.
0.2%.
Okay, so if you figure out what is 0.2% of 11 million people, I mean, when you start running those numbers, it's going to get, you know, it'll be scary looking, because, you know, that's 10%.
It's 26,538.
Yeah, 26,000 people could be dead. That is if Acton's models, No, that's current modeling. But the problem is that if we've tested 80,000 people, we've only got 5,000 cases, Chuck, okay? But we don't have a land office rush on hospital beds, ICUs, or anything of that nature, because right now, according to our own Department of Health's data, of those 5,148 cases, only 1,495 have required hospitalization.
Right.
Okay. Now, many of those are, they put them in overnight for observation, because it's only 472 of that 1,495 that are actually admitted to an intensive care unit because they're having difficulties breathing, etc. So that means statewide in Ohio, Chuck, with all the hospitals and healthcare systems that we have available at our disposal, we've only used 472 ICU beds statewide so far during this entire crisis.
Right.
Now, of those admissions, 193 people died. Okay?
Yeah.
So basically, you're looking at, of the total number of cases in Ohio, it's only related into basically less than 25% of the cases require hospitalization. Approximately 30% of those cases that require hospitalization require admission to the ICU, and of that, 40% of admissions that most likely admissions to the ICU result in the individual, the patient, not surviving.
Right.
But what is not told by this, and now that we've heard from Dr. Birx, and I'm assuming Dr. Acton, they're doing the same thing, in any death that has any kind of relation to COVID-19, i.e., if you test positive for antibodies, et cetera, and you die from something, or you get hit by a bus, as Chuck said. I love that analogy. And you go out and get hit by a bus, and you come to find out that you had a burgeoning case of COVID-19, you're a COVID-19 death. So we don't even know if those 193 are actually directly connected to expiration at the prime result of contracting of this particular issue.
This virus. Okay, think about this. If there are 5,000, about 5,400 confirmed cases, and 80,000 people have been tested, which means they were virus-free, that means the current contraction rate is about 6%. That's way, 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 way lower than the 40%+ they were talking about in the models.
Yes, it is.
And is social distancing responsible for some of that? Yes. Is
sure,
it responsible for all of it? And the answer is no. No. Some people probably have stronger defense systems for whatever reason. There's all kinds of talk of people having proper zinc levels in their body, people having the right amount of vitamin D, people having the right amount of vitamin C, other things. But you know, zinc, D, and vitamin C are you know the standard things they tell you. That the holistic community's been saying for years and years and years and years, you need to keep those levels up during cold and flu season. Zinc's well known for that. My gosh, there are companies out there making products that are zinc inhalers, so you can get it quick into your system. Who were making claims? I think the FDA allowed it, that you could reduce the length of a cold. I'm not going to give them a hand up on that. You can figure out who that is. Gosh, go out there and have a look. So 6% infection rate, 80,000 tested, 5,400 cases, that's about 6%. It's just not there. And we have shut down our economy and are rapidly destroying our economy for a 6% infection rate. That's not making any sense. Now, what we've done in this case is we have allowed ourselves, this is what a rule by experts looks like. Because yes. Mike DeWine essentially took the reins of government and handed them to a quote-unquote expert. And essentially, once you have turned over to the expert, the experts put their field of expertise to work. Now, am I saying that Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx and Dr. Acton are necessarily bad doctors? No. What I'm saying is that what they want is this perfect world. This is a progressive idea. We want this perfect world. Dr. Fauci's out there saying we're never going to be able to do handshakes again. We're never going to be able to get closer than 6 feet again. We're never going to... All these things that we're not going to be able to do again. Our lives have changed considerably. Yes, of course they have. Because we've been hoodwinked into accepting the absolute outside scenarios, the far fringes, as normalcy, and they're not. The numbers simply aren't there. This idea that we're going to stop doing a handshake that is an age old... What are we going to go back to the biblical thing when we make a deal, we trade sandals? That's not going to happen.
You know, nobody wants my sandals.
No. This, again, they want to see a world in which no communicable disease is ever spread by contact. Folks, this is a completely pipe dream scenario. And we need to tell these people, look, a reporter asked a loaded question, and a loaded question is always a fake question. But asked Trump how many deaths he deemed to be acceptable. And Trump, of course, said none. But the fact is that you can't stop things like this. Look, we couldn't stop the seasonal flu. One of the things I'm really worried about, Barry, is Dr. Fauci is making noises. And again, if the rule of experts is allowed to take place, this will happen, that there will be, once we come up with a vaccine, it will be mandatory for you to return to work. Well, let me ask you a question about flu vaccines. How many of them work?
None of them
work. None work. Chuck, they're not really vaccines.
Because that is not what they're designed to do.
Right. They're designed to attempt to provide herd immunity. And herd immunity.
Well, and it isn't even so much that. Okay, you got to think about this. With the immunization, especially like the flu shot, a flu shot isn't to give you immunity from the flu. It can't do that. It isn't even to kick your antibodies in to make it so that you're impenetrable to a flu bug. As we know from the fact that they miss almost every year, and whatever mix that they send out into the population in order to inoculate them, it doesn't coincide with the strain that's happening.
Yes, exactly. They always pick the wrong strain.
But ultimately, when they talk about the efficacy of a flu shot, okay, and that's the word you hear, and people think that means effectiveness, it doesn't. Efficacy of the flu shot just means its likelihood of reducing the severity of the symptoms that you will contract when you are infected with the flu, which you still will be even with a flu shot the vast majority of the time. It just, all the flu shot is for is to help your body to be able to defense against the invader at a level that doesn't send you into the emergency room. It doesn't send you to the hospital. It doesn't send you to the ICU. It creates an environment where, okay, yes, you'll have symptoms. Yes, you'll get the flu, but it won't be to the level of you have to be admitted to the hospital. That's the only thing a flu shot is for, is to reduce the amount of... So this whole idea that they're talking about with COVID-19, about coming up with a vaccine that will prevent it. All they're going to try to do is to come up with something that causes the COVID-19 virus to not have as strong an effect in your system when you contract it. But ultimately, the only way that you're going to have immunity is through natural antibodies, Chuck, from contracting whatever virus is out there, surviving it, and your body in its own way that it's been designed by God, creating the response mechanism naturally to prevent any damage from happening from that particular strain of virus.
Okay, that here's a good point. This is, remember, Dr. Fauci has said he doesn't want us to be able to go back to, he really wants to cook up a scenario where we have to be mandatorily vaccinated. And if it's for COVID-19, it's going to be for the regular flu. And here's why. The average number of deaths since the 1990s per year, average number, because good years it's lower and bad years it's way higher, is 36,000 a year. 36,000. Now, right now, worldwide, do you know how many deaths there have been from COVID-19?
22?
85,000. Worldwide.
Okay.
Worldwide.
Worldwide.
Yeah. Okay. Now, sometimes it's as high as 61,000 from just regular old seasonal flu. Are we now going to require... I know when I go into the doctor, the first thing she says is, have you had your flu shot yet? And I said, no. Shall I prepare one? No. Why? I don't take the flu shot. Oh, why not? Because I never get the flu. I mean, my doctor asked me, when was the last time you had the really bad flu? You know, the one where your lungs fill up with fluid and your temperature goes way up. I said, I had that last... I said, I can just about tell you the year, 1995, either 94 or 95. So it has been 26 years since I had a serious case of the flu. I've had the stomach bug. I've had the stomach bug, and you know, the one where you feel crummy for a couple of days. And my doctor said, well, that's not the flu. That's the stomach bug. I said, whatever, doc. Whatever. Yeah. In that case, I said, I haven't had the flu in 26 years.
Right.
So why would I take a flu shot that has all kinds of, look, you have to make these choices on your own. I have made them on the basis that I know, that there are other immune system, backlashes from taking too many vaccinations. I recently refused I had a tetanus shot. Yeah. Do I take vaccines? Yeah, I do. I'm happy as a clam having had a polio vaccine, because I can still remember going in the hospital and seeing people in iron lungs. So I like living in a world where I can get it, my kids and I can live polio free, essentially, because we don't have the vaccine, or because we do have the vaccine. Other things, I think we over vaccinate for some childhood diseases. Others, I'm really glad that there are vaccines for. I don't take them. So if someone comes to me and says, you can't go to work, you can't do this, you can't do another thing because you haven't had a certain type of vaccination, whoa, this is a constitutional issue.
Hey, Chuck, I've got some sad news for you. It's already happening.
I know it is. It's in the medical profession.
Just ask healthcare workers. Ask teachers in some places, ask daycare workers, ask others in various places that their employment hinges upon. Now, even if they've been employed by this company, and I'm talking, when I say healthcare, I'm not talking just the emergency room nurses or the physicians or whoever sees you in the hospital.
EMTs?
I'm talking about the people.
Yeah.
No, I'm not. I'm talking about the clerical worker who works three buildings away from the hospital, and all they see all day long are electronic files.
Janitors?
They are now under mandates that if they don't annually either A, take the seasonal flu shot, or B, have a medical exception for why they can't take that season strain of the flu shot, and religious and conscience exemptions, even though by law in Ohio they exist, by practice with many of these corporations and companies, they don't. We've had situations and instances of people losing their jobs and being fired because they will not submit to having an invasive medical procedure, which is what taking a shot of anything is, done to them without their consent.
Yep.
Chuck, it's happening already. That's the reason why I represent one of the major health freedom organizations, which is comprised of a lot of frontline medical professionals, nurses, doctors, you name it, who basically are like, this is nuts. This is not how we get things done. This is not how we live in a constitutional republic.
No.
But yet, we've been dealing, and Chuck, it's been here for like 7 years.
Yeah, it's been around for quite a while.
Because it got a super boost under Obamacare when practices and health systems were written in bonuses for getting their immunization rates
for compliance
within their
own
networks.
For compliance, it's insane. If you have a conscience or a scientific reason for not taking a vaccine, and it's something like the flu. Now, let's go back and look. 2 years ago, we had one of the first regular old seasonal flu seasons that we'd had in a long, long time. You know how many people died in the United States?
I don't even know what numbers are.
No. 80,000.
Okay.
So here's what we're hearing. If they suspect, like in November, that the numbers are going to be like that, is Dr. Fauci and Dr. Birx going to come out and say, shut the economy down again?
Potential is there.
The potential is there. We can't hand the whole system over to people who have these pie-in-the-sky ideas about how we're going to stop communicable diseases by forcing people to do nothing but sit in their homes. Look, this thing has to come to an end. Some people are going to die from it. Is it inevitable? Yes. It's inevitable that some communicable disease is going to kill some people. No deaths are acceptable, but it's also not acceptable that the entire economy around the world collapses. And in fact, we can't save these people. We already know there were people that were quarantined in a building in New York City. I have to find this thing. I read it the other day. These people were quarantined in their apartments. They were watched. They didn't come out. And they were separated by... Oh, this wasn't in New York City. This was... in any case, they were in their apartments, and some of them were separated by entire floors, and a whole bunch of people got it. How did that happen? They were speculating that the virus was moving through the pipes. Now, this is an absurdity. The virus cannot move through pipes. Now, maybe some air circulated in the building and that kind of thing. Again, an absurdity. There's something else going on. I'm not saying people are releasing the virus. Don't get me wrong. I'm not going into that place. There's something about the communicability of the disease that we don't understand. And clearly we don't understand it because the numbers that we came up with to build the models on, and remember, the problem with models, Barry, they're computer models. When I was programming computers back in the 80s and 90s, There's an old rule that GIGO. Have you heard of the GIGO rule? GIGO, GIGO?
Garbage in, garbage out.
Garbage in, garbage out. If the assumptions going in are wrong, then the model's going to be wrong. And here's where we've been wrong, Barry. Let's take climate modeling. All the assumptions are for the worst case scenario. Mm-hmm. What actually happens? You know, we were told by Al Gore, who was believing in the models put out by the IPCC, the International Panel on Climate Change, that said that, the Arctic ice would be gone by about 4 years ago. 5 years ago. It would be gone.
Okay.
It would be gone by 2015. What's the actual scenario? Well, it actually grew. Polar bears would all be wiped out from the polar bear population is growing. All these horrible things would happen. We've got the Pope out there saying that that the COVID-19 virus is the Earth reacting to the international climate change, global warming. Come on, get serious, man. This kind of desperation stuff, and what does the Pope know about you know, climate change and global warming? Nothing. He knows what he is being fed to him.
Right.
By believing quote unquote experts. James Dellingpole wrote a thing, and he says, "Look, I'm what's known as a climate skeptic," and he says, "I can tell you for 20 plus years, the models have all been wrong. Why are they wrong? Because the base assumptions are wrong. This is what we're getting into. We're letting these people come in and take over, holding the reins of government when they don't even really have a firm grasp on their own science." Human beings have
That's okay. We let a lot of people run government who don't have a grasp on basic civics.
Oh, that's why I always laugh when somebody says, "I have a degree in government." And I'm like, "Oh, you should be nowhere near the controls."
That's exactly right. Yeah, it's like you should not even be remotely close.
Nope. No think tank for you. No elective office. No, certainly no bureaucratic, unelected bureaucratic office. You just go away and take your government degree and go make pizzas. Because you would be a frightened. I always laugh. Well, I'm a graduate from the John F. Kennedy School of Government. Really? Well, I'm not voting for you.
There you go.
Because, again, rule by expert. If the expertise that you have obtained is incorrect and does not your practice does not meet actual operational theory, then you will create nothing more or less than a mess. And that's putting it mildly. Look at the mess we've created here, Barry. Last week, the last 10 minutes of the show, we talked about the election and the
yes,
muddled mess that has been made. Well,
yes.
The Secretary of State is attempting to fix it, and it's awful. If you are a registered voter, or have been a registered voter, you probably got in the mail a postcard. This is how they're going to fix it: a postcard that tells you how to go through and basically jump through the 100 feet of flaming buffalo dung to get your absentee ballot. Knowing full well that most people will not go to the trouble. This is nothing like an election. This voting by mail, these experts want to make this permanent. Well, look, they tried this in Wisconsin, and guess what happened? We're recording this on Thursday, April 9th. And, of course, Tuesday, they had an election in Wisconsin, and guess what? The world didn't come to an end.
Ah, but I'm glad you said that, because there's an interesting article right now out of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, dated 19 hours ago, so it was yesterday afternoon. Headline: 3 tubs of ballots discovered in mail processing center after the polls closed in Wisconsin. So basically 3 tubs of ballots, and they do not know if these are absentee ballots that were going out to voters or if these were ballots that had already been cast and coming back in. But 3 tubs, and when they're talking about a tub, they're talking about one of those postal mail tubs. Chuck, you've seen those, the white things, reinforced corrugated plastic tubs.
Have I seen them? I got a building full of them. No, I have about 10 of them here.
Yeah, you're not supposed to be keeping those, but that's okay. 3 tubs of ballots for Oshkosh and Appleton. Now, let me just back up here a little bit, folks. Chuck, you know a little bit about Wisconsin. Where are some of the more conservative areas in Wisconsin? Because Wisconsin is ultimately, in many cases, because of Madison and the university area and Milwaukee and other places, is fairly liberal.
Where are
some of the most conservative communities in Wisconsin?
Oh, gosh. Out in the hinterlands like Eau Claire and up around Green Bay and that kind of thing. Those are pretty...
And Oshkosh.
Oshkosh, and yeah.
Appleton.
Yep.
The places where these tubs of ballots were supposed to be, but they've been discovered at a mail processing center. Now, Chuck, you were right. Wisconsin had their election. When did they have it?
Tuesday.
These were found on Wednesday.
Oh, of course they were. Oh, this is Al.
Of course they are.
This is Al Franken again.
Now their problem, their problem is that if you remember last week, there was a big kerfluffle. Because there was this push to try to force Wisconsin to not have a primary and to do an all mail-in election, right?
Yeah.
And it went all the way to the Wisconsin State Supreme Court. And the State Supreme Court basically rejected the idea that you needed to cancel or postpone the actual in-person physical balloting for the primary election in Wisconsin. And they wanted it to go on, right?
I'll say yes.
That's right. Yes, it is. It's right. But the problem is that part of the decision, now again, and this went, and this actually went from the Wisconsin Supreme Court all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court. On Monday, the day before the election, the U.S. Supreme Court, in a split decision, 5-4, ruled that absentee ballots for this election must be in the hands of clerks, that is, in the county boards of elections, by election day.
Right.
Or postmarked by then to be counted. Chuck, regardless of which direction these three tubs of ballots were going, whether they were blank absentees going out to voters, or if they were filled absentees that had been collected and then were being sent back in and they were sorted because they were all going to those two communities. Today's Thursday, as we record this. These ballots were found yesterday, Wednesday. The election was on Tuesday, and it was on Monday that the U.S. Supreme Court basically ruled that absentee ballots had to be in the hands of the clerks by Tuesday in order to be counted. This is the problem with mail-in voting. This is showcasing a major problem with absentee or mail-in voting. Now, again, usually absentee voting is pretty smooth, Chuck. For the most part, you know, you request your, you know, when the election's going to be, you know, hey, I'm going to be out of town that day. I've got to, you know, I've got to be this, that, and the other. Or I'm a poll worker myself, so therefore I got to cast my ballot early. You request your absentee, it gets sent to you, you fill it out, you send it back in, it goes in. It's a fairly orderly process. Not so much with all of this, because when you've got health officials and elected officials and governors and secretaries of state like we had in Ohio, who basically making it look like a Keystone Cops event, which was what happened around our primary with the oh, everything's going to be fine in the first. We'll have the primary in the morning, and by 2 o'clock in the afternoon, we're going to cancel the primary. Well, you don't have the power to do it. Well, we're getting sued through a case that, oh, we invited, and we're going to tell the attorney general not to defend it, so that they can we can get the courts to shut us down. Oh, whoops! The court said no, they can't do that because you don't have the power to do it. It's only the assembly. Oh, well, all right. And then we're going to have a special emergency order late on Monday night where the director of the Department of Health shuts down the polling places.
And this is what I said about
health powers.
Handing over the reins of government to experts.
Exactly. So, and now we've got a hue and cry across the land in Ohio and nationally, because if you listen to Pelosi and company in D.C., and you listen to a lot of the Democrat talkers, including Hillary Clinton, by the way, what are they wanting, Chuck? They're wanting us to basically end in-person voting and go strictly to mail-in, or the next phase will be online voting for all elections. Because, Chuck, if we've had one viral pandemic, we'll have more. And if we can shut an economy down and suspend elections, over 6% of the population contracting a virus, then what happens when it's 14% with the flu? Or if we have a spread, what, you know, folks, they quarantined, they did dry runs of this earlier with the whole the thing with the measles and the mumps. Remember that, Chuck, where communities of Amish and Jewish folks were basically forced quarantined because of outbreaks? Because, oh, but what was our solution? Mandatory vaccinations. Who does that benefit? The power brokers and the people who write big campaign checks.
We did a show on that particular issue, last year or year before last, when we talked about...
It was last summer when this was going on.
Yes, the mandatory... It was in New York. It was in a town in New York that's...
upstate New York,
Well, it wasn't upstate. It was up the Hudson. North of New York City. New Rochelle or somewhere in that vicinity, that's heavily populated by Hasidic Jews who don't take certain kinds of vaccines.
It was in Rockland County, New York, it was just about a year ago, Chuck.
Yep, and essentially they were basically being either forced quarantined or the children were going to be forced to take a vaccine for essentially, I think, the measles.
Yeah, it was measles outbreak, and they basically said that it was this basically community who, because of their religious beliefs, did not vaccinate.
Yeah, and they were the fact is too. Here's the bad part:
Orthodox Jewish.
Yeah, the children that hadn't been vaccinated are the only ones who got the disease. So it's sort of it's one of those things. It's an isolated community. They will have the immunity when they recover from the measles. So you send them home and say you can't, and you do it like they used to do in the old days. They put a quarantine sign up on your door. You can't come in, you can't come out. Unless you've, either had the vaccination or you've got the immunity. For instance, I, when I was a kid, there was no measles vaccination. I had all kinds of measles. I had German measles. I had, all the little measles outbreaks you can have, and I have immunity to that because of that particular thing that I had. So instead, we were going to do mandatory vaccinations and stomp on the constitutional rights of these people who, in their religious belief, do not choose to have the measles vaccination.
Correct.
Okay. It is a complete violation of their rights, and it's a complete I have voluntarily complied with this thing because I'm aware that contact spreads. Is this a dangerous virus? Yes. Is it as dangerous for people like you and me? No, it's not. It's dangerous for people like your father and my mother.
Yeah, absolutely.
And my mother-in-law who lives in my basement.
But then again, it may not be quite as... Yes, it is very dangerous. I'm not going to downplay it. But I find it interesting. My father, and I've said this before, has stage 4 COPD. Okay? He is bedridden on oxygen. All right? Problem is, he contracted this ailment because he smoked his entire life.
Yep.
He was a lifelong smoker. Now, Chuck, according to what I'm hearing is... They're saying that there is a subcategory of people who don't seem to be affected nearly as much by COVID-19, and that is people who are smokers. Amazingly enough, you would think that
it would be a
respiratory virus, that it would cause greater harm to those who have already damaged their respiratory systems through smoking.
Well,
but that doesn't seem to be the case, so I just find it interesting.
There are some other aspects of this virus. I just read an article, and I'm trying to confirm it, but essentially it says it's not so much a lung, it's not so much a respiratory issue, it's a red blood cell issue. And believe it or not, the ability to carry oxygen. What happens is a lot of the virus will attach to the red blood cells, and deplete it of iron, which then, okay, as the virus breaks down, the liver then restores the iron, and there's which means the hemoglobin's driving around with no iron. Well, the hemoglobin, or I mean the red blood cells, are driving around without hemoglobin. A red blood cell without hemoglobin is useless. It's like a tractor trailer rig without the trailer. You've got a tractor and you're driving it around, but you're not hauling anything. And that's the analogy they used in the article. And it said, what happens is the O2 levels start to drop, which is one of the first things they notice, which is why they're blaming respiratory, when in fact it's not respiratory. It's a blood cell, red blood cell problem. Now, the body goes into cytokine storm, which is why the hydrochloroquine seems to work. It stops some of that from going on, and what essentially happens is the body just goes into overreaction mode. Now, why would smokers have more of an immunity? Probably because they have more red blood cells, because they need it to carry extra oxygen. Now, there's another thing that's going on that points possibly to blood chemistry, because black people have a different sort of different blood issues than white people do because of malaria. This is why black people and some Mediterraneans have sickle cell anemia, have sickle cell crises. Sickle cell is a natural defense against malaria, but it also creates other problems. And black people are getting COVID-19 at a higher rate than white people and Asians. This may be why. Now, this is nowhere near settled science, but this is a possibility. And this is one of the things we need to think about, and they need to think about at the research level, and maybe aren't. But there are some scientific papers starting to come out on that basis. And, it's almost... I don't want to make fun of it because, you know, black people do seem to get the brunt of issues like heart disease and strokes and high blood pressure. And now this COVID-19, it doesn't seem fair. But, you know, there's the old joke that Rush Limbaugh used to tell about the headlines in the various newspapers. God calls all the newspapers and tells them he's ending the world in the next day. And the New York Times says the world ends tomorrow. Markets depressed on news. New York Times is essentially, this is the punchline. The New York Times is world ends tomorrow. Women and minorities hardest hit. Unfortunately, it's not a joke in this case. Right. Minorities are hardest hit. But guess which particular sex is hit harder by this virus? It's men.
Yeah, except in Ohio, where 52% of the cases have been women for some reason.
For some weird reason.
For some weird reason, here in Ohio, we have a different direction going. But you're right. Nationally and internationally, this is hitting men harder than it's hitting women.
Yep. Yeah. So we kind of got off the election thing, but because we got back onto the rule by experts. Look, folks, don't let the experts take your right to vote away, as they really kind of have here. Yes, can you vote? Please do vote. Please jump through the hoops. Go get that postcard. If you haven't gotten it, go out to the Ohio Secretary of State website, and you can apply there for your absentee ballot. But understand that one of the reasons that some people want to force us onto absentee ballots is because they can steal elections. And this will be a stolen election. This is a guaranteed incumbent reelection program, which suits the people in an office. And sad to say, in the legislature, just fine. If you think the Republicans are your friends on this, the Republicans built this system. So keep that in mind, folks. And as we run out of time, contact your Congress, your state representatives, your state senators, and say this is not acceptable. not acceptable. That being said, you know what we think. We want to know what you think. www.principledpolicy.com. That's principledpolicy.com. And join us again next week for another Principles and Policies.